She hoped Swan was in the listening crowd. She did try to hold to the oaths. The horses need rest, too, and many of the wagons badly need repairs. The keeper will see to the necessary arrangements. It truly was begun now. She expected neither argument nor discussion, and there was none. What she had told Swan was no exaggeration. Too many sisters hoped for a miracle, so they would not have to march on Tar Valon with the world watching. Even among those convinced in their souls that Elida must be ousted for the good of the tower, despite everything they had done, too many would grasp any chance of delay, any chance for that miracle to appear. One of those last, Romanda, did not wait for Shiriam to speak the closing lines. As soon as Egwene finished speaking, Romanda, looking quite youthful with her tight gray bun hidden by her hood, simply strode away. Cloaks flapping, Magla, Saroya, and Varalyn scurried after her. As well as anyone could scurry, when every other step sank ankle deep. They did a good job of it anyway. Sitters or no, they hardly seemed to breathe without Romanda's permission. When Lilaine saw Romanda leaving, she gathered up Faisella, Takima, and Lirella from the semicircle with a gesture and went without a backward glance, like a swan with three anxious goslings. If they were not so firmly in Lelaine's grasp as the other three were in Romanda's, they did not fall far short. For that matter, the rest of the sitters barely waited on the final "depart now in the light" to leave Shiriam's lips. Egwene turned to go, with her hall of the tower already scattering in every direction. That tingle was stronger, and very like being queasy. 3 days, Shiriam murmured, offering Egwene a hand to help her down into one of the rutted paths. The corners of her tilted green eyes crinkled quizzically. "I'm surprised, Mother. Forgive me, but you dug in your heels nearly every time I wanted to stop for more than one." "Speak to me again after you've talked to the wheelwrights and farriers," Egwene told her. "We'll not go far with horses dropping dead and wagons falling apart." "As you say, Mother," the other woman replied, not precisely meekly, but in perfect acceptance. The footing was no better now than it had been the night before, and their steps sometimes slid. Linking arms, they walked on slowly. Shiriam offered more support than Egwene required, but she did so almost surreptitiously. The Armorland seat should not fall on her bottom in the full view of 50 sisters and 100 servants, but neither should she seem propped up like an invalid. Most of the sitters who had sworn to Egwene, Shiriam included, had done so out of simple fear, really, and self-preservation. If the hall learned they had sent sisters to sway the Aes Sedai in Tar Valon, and worse, kept the fact from the hall for fear of dark friends among the sitters, they surely and certainly would spend the rest of their lives in penance and exile. So the women who had believed they could somehow twitch Egwene about like a puppet, after the greater part of their influence with the hall melted, instead found themselves sworn to obey her. That was rare, even in the secret histories. Sisters were expected to obey the Armorlin, but swearing fealty was something else again. Most still seemed unsettled by it, though they did obey. Few were as bad as Carlinia, but Egwene had actually heard Beonin's teeth chatter the first time she saw Egwene with sitters after swearing. Morvryn looked astonished anew whenever her eyes fell on Egwene, as if she still did not quite believe. And Nisau hardly seemed to stop frowning. Anaya clicked her tongue over the secrecy, and Mirella often flinched, though for more reason than taking an oath. But Shiriam simply had settled into the role of Egwene's keeper of the chronicles in truth, not just name. "May I suggest using this opportunity to see what the surrounding country offers in way of food and fodder, Mother? Our stocks are low," Shiriam frowned anxiously. "Especially tea and salt, though I doubt we'll find those." "Do what you can," Egwene said in a soothing tone. Odd now to think that once she had gone in awe of Shiriam, and in no little fear of her displeasure. Strange as it seemed, now that she was no longer mistress of novices, no longer trying to tug and push Egwene to do as she wished, Shiriam actually seemed happier. "I have every confidence in you, Shiriam." The woman positively beamed at the compliment. The sun still did not show above the tents and wagons to the east, but the camp was already bustling, in a manner of speaking. Breakfast done, the cooks were cleaning up, helped by a horde of novices. From the vigor they put into it, the young women seemed to find some warmth in scrubbing kettles with snow, but the cooks moved laboriously, knuckling their backs, stopping to sigh and sometimes to pull their cloaks close and stare bleakly at the snow. Shivering serving men, wearing most of the clothes they owned, had begun striking tents and loading wagons automatically as soon as they finished their hasty meal, and were now stumbling about to raise the tents and haul chests out of the wagons. Animals that had been being harnessed were now being led away by weary horse handlers who walked with heads down. Egwene heard a few grumbles from men who failed to notice there were sisters nearby, but the greater number seemed too tired to voice a complaint. Most of the Aes Sedai whose tents were up had vanished inside, but a good many still directed workers, and others hurried along the sunken paths on errands of their own. Unlike everyone else, they showed as little outward weariness as the warders, who somehow managed to appear as if they had had all the sleep they needed for this fine spring day. Egwene suspected that was a real part of how a sister drew strength from her warder, quite aside from what she could do with the bond. When your warder would not admit to himself that he was cold or tired or hungry, you just had to bear up as well. On one of the crossing paths, Morvryn appeared, clutching Takima's arm. Perhaps it was for support, though Morvryn was wide enough to make the shorter woman seem more diminutive than she actually was. Perhaps it was to keep Takima from escaping. Morvryn was dogged once she set a goal. Egwene frowned. Morvryn might well be expected to seek out a sitter for her Aja, the Brown, yet Egwene would have thought Janya or Esmeralda more likely. The two passed out of sight behind a canvas-topped wagon on runners, Morvryn bending to talk in her companion's ear. There was no way to tell whether Takima was paying any mind. "Is something the matter, Mother?" Egwene put on a smile that felt tight. "No more than usual, Shiriam. No more than usual." At the Armorlin's study, Shiriam departed to see to the tasks Egwene had given her, and Egwene went in to find everything in readiness. She would have been surprised at anything else. Selaim was just setting a tea tray on the writing table. Brightly colored beadwork ran across the rail-thin woman's bodice and down her sleeves, and with her long nose carried high, she hardly seemed a servant at first glance, but she had seen to what needed doing. Two braziers full of glowing coals had taken some of the chill off the air, though most of the heat rushed out through the smoke hole. Dried herbs sprinkled on the coals gave a pleasant scent to the smoke that did not escape. The tray from the night before was gone, and the lantern and tallow candles had been trimmed and lit. No one was about to leave a tent open enough to let in light from outside. Swan was already there, too, with a stack of papers in her hand, a harried expression on her face, and a smudge of ink on her nose. The post of secretary provided the two of them another reason to be seen talking, and Shiriam had not minded at all giving up the work. Swan herself grumbled frequently, however. For a woman who had seldom left the tower since entering as a novice, she had a remarkable dislike for staying inside. At the moment she was the picture of a woman being patient and wanting everyone to know it. For all her high nose, Selaim simpered and bobbed so many curtsies that taking Egwene's cloak and mittens turned into an elaborate little ceremony. The woman nattered on about the mother putting her feet up, and perhaps she should fetch the mother a lap robe, and maybe she should stay in case the mother wanted anything else, until Egwene practically chased her out. The tea tasted of mint. In this weather? Selaim was a trial, and she could hardly be called loyal, but she did try. There was no time for lounging and sipping tea, though. Egwene straightened her stole and took her place behind the writing desk, absent-mindedly giving a yank to the leg of her chair so it would not fold beneath her as it often did. Swan perched atop a rickety stool on the other side of the table, and the tea cooled. They did not speak of plans or Garth Bryn or hopes. What could be done there for now had been. Reports and problems piled up when they were on the move, and weariness overcame attempts to deal with them, and now that they were stopped, all had to be gone through. An army ahead did not change that. At times Egwene wondered how so much paper could be found when everything else seemed so difficult. The reports Swan handed her detailed shortages and little else. Not simply those Shiriam had mentioned, but coal and nails and iron for the farriers and wheelwrights, leather and oiled thread for the harness makers, lamp oil and candles and 100 other things, even soap. And whatever was not running out was wearing out, from shoes to tents, all listed in Swan's bold hand, which grew more aggressive the more glaring the need she wrote about. Her account of the coin remaining looked to have been slashed onto the paper in a positive fury, and not a thing to be done about it. Among Swan's papers were several addresses from sitters suggesting ways to solve the problem of money, or rather informing Egwene what they intended to lay before the hall. There were few advantages to any of the schemes, however, and many pitfalls. Moira Carantanis proposed stopping the soldiers' pay, a notion Egwene thought the hall had already realized would cause the army to melt away like dew under a midsummer sun. Malind Nachinin presented an appeal to nearby nobles that sounded more a demand and might well turn the whole countryside against them, as would Salita Toranis' intention to levy a tax on the towns and villages they passed. Crumpling the three addresses together in her fist, Egwene shook them at Swan. She wished it were the three sitters' throats she was gripping. "Do they all think everything has to go the way they wish, and never mind realities? Light! They're the ones behaving like children!" "The tower has managed to make its wishes become realities often enough," Swan said complacently. "Remember, some would say you're ignoring reality, too." Egwene sniffed. Luckily, whatever the hall voted, none of the proposals could be carried forward without a decree from her. Even in her straitened circumstances, she had a little power. Very little, but that was more than none. "Is the hall always this bad, Swan?" Swan nodded, shifting slightly to try to find a better balance. No two of her stool's legs were the same length. "But it could be worse. Remind me to tell you about the year of the Four Armorlands. That was about 150 years after the founding of Tar Valon. In those days the normal workings of the tower nearly rivaled what's happening today. Every hand tried to snatch the tiller if they could. There were actually 2 rival halls of the tower in Tar Valon for part of that year, almost like now. Just about everyone came to grief in the end, including a few who thought they were going to save the tower. Some of them might have, if they hadn't stepped in quicksand. The tower survived anyway, of course. It always does." A great deal of history grew up in over 3,000 years, much suppressed, hidden from all but a few eyes, yet Swan seemed to have every detail at her fingertips. She must have spent a good part of her years in the tower burying herself in those secret histories. Of one thing Egwene was certain. She would avoid Shine's fate if she could, but she would not remain as she was, little better off than Samyla Sorenthane. Long before the end of her reign, the most important decision left to Samyla's discretion was what dress to wear. She was going to have to ask Swan to tell her about the year of the Four Armorlands, and she did not look forward to it. The shifting beam of light from the smoke hole in the roof showed morning toward midday, but Swan's stack of papers seemed hardly diminished. Any interruption at all would have been welcome, even premature discovery. Well, maybe not that. "What's next, Swan?" she growled. A flicker of movement caught Arangar's eye, and she peered through the trees toward the army's camp, an obscuring ring around the tents of the Aes Sedai. A line of wagon sledges was moving slowly east, escorted by men on horseback. The pale sun glinted from armor and the points of lances. She could not help sneering. Spears and horses! A primitive rabble that could move no faster than a man could walk, led by a man who did not know what was happening 100 miles away. Aes Sedai? She could destroy the lot of them, and even dying they would never suspect who was killing them. Of course she would not survive them long. That thought made her shiver. The great lord gave very few a second chance at life, and she was not about to throw away hers. Waiting until the riders moved out of sight into the forest, she started back toward the camp, thinking idly of tonight's dreams. Behind her, smooth snow would hide what she had buried until the spring thaw, more than long enough. Ahead, some of the men in the camp finally noticed her and straightened from their tasks to watch. In spite of herself, she smiled and smoothed her skirt over her hips. It was difficult now to really remember what life had been like as a man. Had she been such an easily manipulated fool then? Getting through that swarm with a corpse unseen had been difficult, even for her, but she enjoyed the walk back. The morning went on in a seemingly endless wading through paper until what Egwene had known would happen did. Certain daily events were sure. There would be bitter cold, there would be snow, there would be clouds and gray skies and wind, and there would be visits from Lelaine and Ramonda. Weary of sitting, Egwene was stretching her legs when Lelaine swept into the tent with Faolaine at her heels. Frigid air rolled in with them before the tent flap fell shut. Looking around with a faintly disapproving air, Lelaine plucked off blue leather gloves while allowing Faolaine to remove the lynx-lined cloak from her shoulders. Slender and dignified in deep blue silk, with penetrating eyes, she might have been in her own tent. At a casual gesture, Faolaine retreated deferentially to a corner with the garment, merely shrugging her own cloak back. Plainly, she was ready to go on the instant at another wave of the sitter's hand. Her dark features wore a cast of resigned meekness, not very much like her. Lelaine's reserve cracked for a moment in a surprisingly warm smile for Swan. They had been friends once, years ago, and she had even offered something like the patronage that Faolaine had accepted, a sitter's protection and sheltering arm against the sneers and accusations of other sisters. Touching Swan's cheek, Lelaine softly murmured something that sounded sympathetic. Swan blushed, a startling uncertainty flashing across her face. It was not pretense, Egwene was sure. Swan found it difficult to deal with what really had changed in her, and more, with how easily she was adapting. Lelaine eyed the stool in front of the writing table, and, as usual, visibly rejected such an unsteady seat. Only then did she acknowledge Egwene's presence with the barest dip of her head. "We need to speak of the sea folk, mother," she said, in a tone a bit firm to be directed at the Ammerlin seat. Not until Egwene's heart sank down from her throat did she realize she had been afraid that Lelaine already knew what Lord Bryn had told her, or even the meeting he was arranging. The next instant her heart leaped back again. The sea folk? Surely the hall could not have learned of the insane bargain Nynaeve and Elaine had made. She could not imagine what had led them into such a disaster, or how she was to deal with it. Her stomach roiling, she took her place behind the table without revealing anything of what she felt. And that fool chair leg folded, nearly dropping her onto the carpets before she could jerk it straight again. She hoped her cheeks were not coloring. "The sea folk in Camelin or in Cairhien?" Yes, that sounded suitably calm and collected. "Cairhien!" Romanda's high voice rang like sudden chimes. "Definitely Cairhien!" Her entry made Lelaine seem almost diffident, the force of her personality abruptly filling the tent. There were no warm smiles in Romanda. Handsome as her face was, it did not seem made for them. Theodrin followed her in, and Romanda swung her cloak off with a flourish and tossed it to the slim, apple-cheeked sister, with a peremptory gesture that sent Theodrin hurrying to a corner opposite Faolaine. Faolaine was distinctly subdued, but Theodrin's tilted eyes were very wide, as though she was permanently startled, and her lips seemed ready to gasp. Like Faolaine, her proper place in the hierarchy of Aes Sedai demanded better employment, but neither was likely to receive it soon. Romanda's compelling gaze rested a moment on Swan, as if considering whether to send her to a corner as well, then brushed past Lelaine almost dismissively before settling on Egwene. "It seems that young man has been talking with the sea folk, mother. The yellow eyes and ears in Cairhien are most excited about it. Do you have any idea what might interest him in the Atha An Mhaer?" Despite the title, Romanda hardly sounded as if she were addressing the Ammerlin seat, but then she never did. There was no doubt who that young man was. Every sister in the camp accepted that Rand was the dragon reborn, but anyone who heard them talk would have believed they were speaking of an unruly young lout who might come to dinner drunk and throw up on the table. "She can hardly know what's in the boy's head," Lelaine said before Egwene could open her mouth. Her smile was not at all warm this time. "If an answer is to be found, Romanda, it will be in Camelin. The Atha An Mhaer there are not sequestered on a ship, and I seriously doubt that high-ranking sea folk came so far from the sea on different errands. I've never heard of them doing so for any reason. It may be they have an interest in him. They must know who he is by now." Romanda smiled back, and frost should have appeared on the tent walls. "There's hardly need to state the obvious, Lelaine. The first question is how to find out. I was about to resolve that when you barged in, Romanda. The next time the mother encounters Elaine or Nynaeve in Telairunriod, she can pass on instructions. Marilla can discover what the Atha An Mier want, or maybe what the boy does, when she reaches Camelin. A pity the girls didn't think to set a regular schedule, but we must work around that. Marilla can meet with a sitter in Telairunriod when she knows." Lelaine made a small gesture. Plainly she herself was the intended sitter. "I thought Salidar might be a suitable place." Romanda snorted with amusement. Even in that there was no warmth. "Easier to instruct Marilla than to see she obeys, Lelaine. I expect she knows she faces sharp questions. This bowl of the winds should have been brought to us for study first. None of the sisters in Ebudar had much ability in cloud dancing, I believe. And you can see the result, all this hurly-burly and suddenness. I have a thought to call a question before the hall concerning everyone involved." Abruptly, the gray-haired woman's voice became smooth as butter. "As I recall, you supported the choice of Marilla." With a jerk, Lelaine drew herself up. Her eyes flashed. "I supported who the gray put forward, Romanda, and no more," she said indignantly. "How could I have imagined she would decide to use the bowl there, and to include sea-folk wilders in the circle? How could she believe they know as much of working weather as Aes Sedai?" Abruptly her ire slipped. She was defending herself to her fiercest adversary in the hall, her only real adversary, and, no doubt worse in her view, she was agreeing with her about the sea folk. There was no question that she did agree, but giving the fact voice was another matter. Romanda let her cold smile deepen as Lelaine's face paled with fury. She straightened her bronze-colored skirts with meticulous care as Lelaine searched for a way to turn matters about. "We will see how the hall stands, Lelaine," she said finally. "Until the question is called, I think it best if Marilla does not meet with any of the sitters involved in her selection. Even a suggestion of collusion would be looked at askance. I'm sure you will agree I should be the one to speak with her." Lelaine's face paled differently. She was not afraid, not visibly, yet Egwene could almost see her counting who might stand for her or against. Collusion was almost as serious as a charge of treason, and required only the lesser consensus. Likely she could avoid that, but the arguments would be deep and acrimonious. Romanda's faction might even increase. That would cause untold problems, whether or not Egwene's own plans bore fruit. And there was nothing she could do to stop it, short of revealing what really had happened in Ebudar. As well ask them to let her accept the same offer Faolaine and Theodrin had. Egwene drew breath. At least she might be able to prevent the use of Salidar as a meeting place in Telairunriod. That was where she met Elaine and Nynaeve now. When she did, anyway. She had not in days. With sitters popping in and out of the world of dreams, finding anywhere you could be sure they would not appear was difficult. "The next time I encounter Elaine or Nynaeve, I will pass on your instructions regarding Marilla. I can let you know when she's ready to meet you." Which would be never, once she was done with those instructions. The sitters' heads whipped around, and two sets of eyes stared at her. They had forgotten she was there. Struggling to keep her face smooth, she realized her foot was tapping irritably, and stopped it. She had to go along with what they thought of her a while longer yet. A little while longer. At least she no longer felt nauseated, just angry. Into that moment of silence, Chesa came bustling with Egwene's midday meal on a cloth-covered tray. Dark-haired, plump, and pretty in her middle years, Chesa managed to convey a proper respect without cringing. Her curtsy was as simple as her dark gray dress, with just a touch of plain lace at the throat. "Forgive me for intruding, Mother," Aes Sedai. "I am sorry this is late, Mother, but Mary seems to have wandered off." She clicked her tongue in exasperation as she set the tray in front of Egwene. Wandering seemed very unlike the misnamed Mary. That Dur woman was as disapproving of faults in herself as she was of those in others. Romanda frowned, but she said nothing. After all, she could hardly show too much interest in one of Egwene's maids, especially when the woman was her spy, just as Selaim was Lelaine's. Egwene avoided looking at Theodrin or Fayalane, both still standing dutifully in their corners like accepted, rather than Aes Sedai themselves. Chesa half opened her mouth, but closed it again, perhaps intimidated by the sitters. Egwene was relieved when she dipped another curtsy and left with a murmured, "By your leave, mother." Chase's advice was always indirect enough for any sister when anyone else was present. But right then, the last thing Egwene wanted was even a circumspect reminder to eat while her food was hot. Lelaine took up as if there had been no interruption. "The important thing," she said firmly, "is to learn what the Atha An Mier want, or what the boy does. Maybe he wants to be their king, too." Holding out her arms, she allowed Fayolaine to restore her cloak, which the dark young woman did with care. "You will remember to let me know if you have any thoughts on it, mother?" That was just barely a request. "I will think hard," Egwene told her, which was not to say she would share her thoughts. She wished she had a glimmer of the answer. That the Atha An Mier believed Rand was their prophesied Curamor, she knew, though the hall did not. But what he wanted from them, or them from him, she could not begin to imagine. According to Elaine, the sea folk with them had no clue, or said not. Egwene almost wished one of the handful of sisters who had come from the Atha An Mier was in the camp. Almost. One way or another, those windfinders were going to cause trouble. At a wave of Romanda's hand, Theodrin leaped forward with the sitter's cloak as though goosed. By Romanda's expression, Lilaine's recovery did not best please her. "You will remember to tell Marilla I wish to speak with her, mother," she said, and that was not a request at all. For a brief moment the two sitters stood staring at one another, Egwene forgotten again in their mutual animosity. They departed without a word to her, very nearly jostling for precedence, before Romanda slipped out first, drawing Theodrin in her wake. Baring her teeth, Lilaine practically pushed Fayolaine from the tent ahead of her. Swan heaved a hearty sigh and made no attempt to hide her relief. "By your leave, mother," Egwene muttered mockingly. "If you please, mother, you may go, daughters." Letting out a long breath, she settled back in her chair, which promptly pitched her onto the carpets in a heap. She picked herself up slowly and jerked her skirts straight, put her stole to right. At least it had not happened in front of those two. "Go get something to eat, Swan, and bring it back. We've a long day yet." "Some falls hurt less than others," Swan said as if to herself before ducking outside. It was a good thing she went so quickly, or Egwene might have given her an earful. She returned soon, though, and they ate hard rolls and lentil stew laced with tough carrot and scraps of meat Egwene did not look at closely. There were only a few interruptions, intrusions where they fell silent and pretended to study reports. Chesa came to take away the tray, and later to replace the candles, a task she grumbled over, which was not like her. "Who'd expect Selaim to go missing, too?" she muttered, half to herself. "Off canoodling with the soldiers, I expect. That Halima's a bad influence." A skinny young fellow with a dripping nose renewed the already dead coals in the braziers. The Armerlin got more warmth than most, but that was not a great deal. And he stumbled over his own boots and gaped at Egwene in a manner quite gratifying after the two sitters. Shiriam appeared to ask whether Egwene had any further instructions of all things, and then seemed to want to stay. Perhaps the few secrets she knew made her nervous. Her eyes certainly darted uneasily. That was the lot, and Egwene was not sure whether it was because no one bothered the Amyrlin without cause, or because everyone knew the real decisions were made in the hall. "I don't know about this report of soldiers moving south out of Kandor," Swan said as soon as the tent flap fell behind Shiriam. "There's just the one, and borderlanders seldom go far from the Blight, but every fool knows that, so it's hardly the kind of tale anyone would make up." She was not reading from a page now. Swan had managed to keep very tenuous control of the Amyrlin's network of eyes and ears so far, and reports, rumors, and gossip flowed to her in steady streams, to be studied before she and Egwene decided what to pass on to the hall. Liana had her own network to add to the flow. Most of it was passed on. Some things the Hall had to know, and there was no guarantee that the Ajahs would pass on what their own agents learned. But it all had to be sieved for what might be dangerous, or serve to divert attention from the real goal. Few of those streams carried anything good of late. Kyrian had produced any number of rumors of Aes Sedai allied with Rand, or worse, serving him. Yet at least those could be dismissed out of hand. The Wise Ones would not say much at all about Rand or anyone connected to him, but according to them, Mirana was awaiting his return, and certainly Sisters in the Sun Palace, where the Dragon Reborn kept his first throne, were more than seed enough to grow those tales. Others were not easily ignored, even when it was hard to know what to make of them. A printer in Ilion asserted that he had proof Rand had killed Matin Stepaneus with his own hands, and destroyed the body with the One Power, while a laborer on the docks there claimed she had seen the former king carried, bound and gagged and rolled in a rug, aboard a ship that had sailed in the night with the blessings of the captain of the port watch. The first was far more likely, but Egwene hoped none of the Ajah's agents had picked up the same tale. There were already too many black marks against Rand's name in the sisters' books. It went on like that. The Shan Chan seemed to be taking a firm hold in Ebudar against very little resistance. That might have been expected, in a land where the queen's true rule ended a few days' ride from her capital, yet it was hardly heartening. The Shido seemed to be everywhere, though word of them always came from someone who had heard from someone who had heard. Most sisters seemed to believe the scattered Shido were Rand's work, despite the Wise One's denials, carried by Shiriam. No one wanted to probe the Wise One's supposed lies too closely, of course. There were 100 excuses, but no one was willing to meet them in Tel Arunriod except the sisters sworn to Egwene, and they had to be ordered. Anaya dryly called the encounters quite compact lessons in humility, and she did not seem at all amused. "There can't be that many Shido," Egwene muttered. No herbs had been added to the second batch of charcoal, which was dying down in faint embers, and her eyes ached from the smoke that hung thin in the air. Channeling to get rid of it would disperse the last warmth, too. Some of this must be bandits' work. After all, who could tell a village emptied by people fleeing brigands from one emptied by Shido? Especially at third hand, or fifth. There are certainly enough bandits around to account for some of it. Most calling themselves Dragonsworn, which was no help at all. She worked her shoulders to loosen a few of the knots in her muscles. Abruptly, she realized that Swan was staring at nothing so intently that she appeared ready to slip off of her stool. "Swan, are you falling asleep? We may have worked most of the day, but it's still light out." There was light at the smoke hole, though it did appear to be fading. Swan blinked. "I'm sorry. I've been thinking about something lately and trying to decide whether to share it with you. About the Hall." "The Hall? Swan, if you know something about the Hall—" "I don't know anything," Swan cut in. "It's what I suspect." She clicked her tongue in annoyance. "Not even suspect, really. At least I don't know what to suspect. But I see a pattern."
"Then you had best tell me about it," Egwene said.
Swan had shown herself very skilled at detecting patterns where others saw only a jumble. Shifting on her stool, Swan leaned forward intently. "It's this. Aside from Romanda and Moria, the sitters chosen in Salidar are... they're too young." Much had changed in Swan, but speaking of other sisters' ages clearly made her uncomfortable. "Esmeralda is the oldest, and I'm sure she isn't much past 70. I can't be certain without going into the novice books in Tarvalin or her telling us, but I'm as sure as I can be. It isn't often the Hall has held more than one sitter under 100, and here we have 9.
"But Romanda and Moria are new," Egwene said gently, resting her elbows on the table. It had been a long day.
"And neither is young. Maybe we should be grateful the others are, or they might not have been willing to raise me." She could have pointed out that Swan herself had been chosen Amarlin at less than half Esmeralda's age, but the reminder would have been cruel. "Maybe," Swan said stubbornly.
Romanda was certain for the hall as soon as she showed up. I doubt there's a yellow would dare speak against her for a chair. And Moria, she doesn't cling to Lilaine, but Lilaine and Lirella probably thought she would. I don't know. Mark me, though. When a woman is raised too young, there's a reason. She took a deep breath, including when I was. The pain of loss flashed across her face. The loss of the Ammerlin seat, certainly. Maybe of all the losses she had suffered. It was gone almost as soon as it came. Egwene did not think she had ever known a woman as strong as Swan Sanche. This time there were more than enough sisters of proper age to choose from, and I can't see five Ajahs deadlocking on all of them. There is a pattern, and I mean to pick it out. Egwene did not agree. Change hung in the air whether Swan wanted to see it or not. Elida had broken custom, come very close to breaking law in usurping Swan's place. Sisters had fled the tower and let the world know of it, and that last certainly had never happened before. Change. Older sisters were more likely to be tied to the old ways, but even some of them had to see that everything was shifting. Surely that was why younger women, more open to the new, had been chosen. Should she order Swan to stop wasting her time with this? Swan had enough else to do. Or would it be a kindness to let her continue? She wanted so deeply to prove that the change she saw was not really occurring at all. Before Egwene could make a decision, Romanda ducked into the tent and stood holding the tent flap open. Long shadows stretched across the snow outside. Evening was coming fast. Romanda's face was as dark as those shadows. She fixed Swan with a stern gaze and snapped one word. Out! Egwene gave an infinitesimal nod, but Swan was already on her feet. She missed a step, then all but ran from the tent. Any sister who stood where Swan did was expected to obey any sister of Romanda's strength and the power, not just a sitter. Throwing down the tent flap, Romanda embraced the source. The glow of Sidar surrounded her, and she wove a ward against eavesdropping around the inside of the tent without so much as a pretense of asking Egwene's permission. "You are a fool!" she grated. "How long did you think you could keep this a secret? Soldiers talk, child. Men always talk. Bryn will be lucky if the hall doesn't put his head on a pike." Egwene stood slowly, smoothing her skirt. She had been waiting for this, but she still needed to be careful. The game was far from played out, and everything could still turn against her in a flash. She had to pretend innocence until she could afford to stop pretending. "Must I remind you that rudeness to the Ammerlin seat is a crime, daughter?" she said instead. She had been pretending so long, and she was so close. "The Ammerlin seat!" Romanda strode across the carpets to within arm's reach of Egwene, and by her glare the thought of reaching more crossed her mind. "You're an infant. Your bottom still remembers the last switching it had as a novice. After that you'll be lucky if the hall doesn't put you in a corner with a few play pretties. If you want to avoid that, you will listen to me and do as I tell you. Now sit down!" Egwene seethed inside, but she sat. It was too soon. With a sharp, satisfied nod, Romanda planted her fists on her hips. She stared down at Egwene like a stern aunt lecturing a misbehaving niece. A very stern aunt. Or a headsman with a toothache. "This meeting with Pelivar and Arathel has to go forward now it's been arranged. They expect the Ammerlin seat, and they will see her. You will attend with all the pomp and dignity your title deserves. And you will tell them I am to speak for you, after which you will hold your tongue. Getting them out of our way will require a firm hand and someone who knows what she's about. No doubt Lilaine will be here any minute, trying to put herself forward, but you just remember the trouble she's in. I've spent the day speaking with other sitters, and it appears very likely that Marilla and Mirana's failures will be quite firmly attached to Lilaine when the hall sits next. So if you have any hope of gaining the experience you'll need to grow into that stole, it lies with me. Do you understand me?" "I understand perfectly," Egwene said, in what she hoped was a meek voice. If she let Romanda speak in her place, there would no longer be any doubts. The hall and the whole world would know who held Egwene Alvear by the scruff of her neck. Romanda's eyes seemed to bore into her head before the woman gave a curt nod. I hope that you do. I intend to remove Elida from the Ammerlin seat, and I won't see that ruined because a child thinks she knows enough to find her way across the street without her hand held. With a snort, she flung her cloak around her and flung herself out of the tent. The ward vanished as she did. Egwene sat and frowned at the tent's entrance. A child? Burn the woman, she was the Ammerlin's seat. Whether they liked it or not, they had raised her, and they were going to have to live with it. Eventually. Snatching up the stone inkwell, she hurled it at the tent flap. Lilaine dodged back, barely avoiding the splash. Temper, temper, she chided, coming on in. No more asking permission than Romanda had, she embraced the source and wove a ward to stop anyone overhearing what she had to say. Where Romanda had been in a fury, Lilaine appeared pleased with herself, rubbing her gloved hands and smiling. I don't suppose I need tell you your little secret is out. Very bad of Lord Bryn, but I think he's too valuable to kill. A good thing for him, I do. Let me see. I suppose Romanda told you that there will be a meeting with Pellivar and Arathel, but you are to let her do all the talking. Am I right? Egwene stirred, but Lilaine waved a hand at her. No need to answer. I know Romanda. Unfortunately for her, I learned about this before she did, and instead of running to you straight away, I've been polling the other sitters. Do you want to know what they think? Egwene balled her fists in her lap, where she hoped they would not be noticed. I expect you're going to tell me. You're in no position to take that tone with me, Lilaine said sharply, but the next instant her smile returned. The hall is displeased with you. Very displeased. Whatever Romanda has threatened you with, and it's easy enough to imagine, I can deliver. Romanda, on the other hand, has upset a number of sitters with her bullying. So unless you want to find yourself with less authority than the little you have now, Romanda is going to be surprised tomorrow when you name me to speak for you. It's hard to believe Arathel and Pellivar were foolish enough to put a thing like this in motion, but they'll slink away with their tails between their legs once I'm done with them. How do I know you won't carry out those threats anyway? Egwene hoped her angry mutter sounded like sullenness. Light, but she was tired of this. Because I say I won't, Lilaine snapped. Don't you know by now that you aren't really in charge of anything? The hall is, and that is between Romanda and me. In another 100 years you may grow into the stole, but for now, sit quietly, fold your hands, and let someone who knows what she is about see to pulling Elida down. After Lilaine left, Egwene once more sat staring.